I'm just going to say at the top that my name is Marsha Armani, and I'm here with Laura Phelps, and we're here to interview Tim Rooney.
Yep.
And it is, we're at your home in Marshfields.
That's right.
And it is Tuesday, July the
16th, 2019.
Okay, so I'm just going to pop this down here then, Tim. Tim Rooney, that's a good Irish name.
Yeah, it's his original Irish name. I've got some relatives in Northern Ireland.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could just start off. Could you just introduce yourself?
Yeah, well, I was born in Northern Ireland, and born in 1956. And obviously my dad had a farm here then, which was bigger than it is now. And when I got to school, I wasn't really very keen on school. Always had horses, always been involved with horses. Started riding pointer pointing when I was 14. And I did like metalwork in school, so it seemed the obvious thing to do to start an apprenticeship when I was 16, which I did out at Penhow, and did my four-year apprenticeship then and got my certificate, my registered shoeing smith. And I've been shoeing horses ever since. I've had 15 apprentices, my son being one of them. My first apprentice was Billy Crothers from Rumney in Cardiff, and he became world champion farrier on 5 occasions. My second apprentice was Hayden Price, who's been Olympic farrier a couple of occasions. My third apprentice is Andy Martin, who's now got a practice near Chipping Norton in the Cotswolds. He's an eminent farrier and judge, and trains racehorses as well. So yeah, quite a few apprentices over the years.
I was going to say, what a stable talent. That's a bit obvious, isn't it?
Well, they all started here. They all did their apprenticeships with me and spent 4 years here.
Who did you train under then?
I trained under a chap by the name of Christopher Bell, who was a Scotsman who lived at Penhow, and he married the old forge at Penhow was run by a gentleman by the name of Percy Townsend. And Percy Townsend had four daughters, and Lou Bell married one of his daughters and moved from Invergordon in Scotland down to live in South Wales. And I did my apprenticeship with Lou.
So what did you learn from him that you're clearly passing down?
Work ethic, I think, as much as anything else. And to do quality work, which is the most important thing, because horses have to keep horses on the road, keep them sound.
Why did you do your apprenticeship at Penhow? Tell us what Penhow is.
Penhow is only a small village between Newport and Chepstow on the A48, and there were very few forges or farriers around when I started in 1972, and there were very few farriers around. I think between Chepstow and Cowbridge there were four guys shoeing horses. Now there's something like 50 shoeing horses. So it's changed a bit. Yeah. We've trained too many now.
What's changed though in the equine world? Why are there more? And why were there so
Well, many horses became a lot more popular for riding, for recreational riding. You know, as far as ponies in pony club, riding clubs, general riding, and a lot of sort of livery yards now have got all weather surfaces where the people don't have to go riding out on the roads, because the roads are getting so busy now in this area, as it, in most areas, that it's more dangerous to ride on the road than it used to be.
But Lord Tredegar was a huntsman, wasn't he?
So he was the master of the hunt. He wasn't a huntsman.
What's the difference?
Well, the master is the boss and oversees everything. The huntsman is the man that works with the hounds and actually hunts the hounds.
So that would have used horses?
Yes, definitely.
So I'm just trying to think why there are so few farriers.
When were there fewer farriers then?
So you started in 72,
yep.
And there were only four then?
This area, yeah.
So when Lord Tretega was hunting, that was much further back?
Well, there was, yes, definitely. And you see, when Lord Tretega was hunting, it would have been pre-Second World War.
Okay, yeah.
Because the Tretega estate got split up.
Mm.
And it was bought by the Eagle Star Insurance Company. And all the farms were then individually sold off by the Eagle Star Insurance Company. That's who my dad bought this place off the Eagle Star in 1949, I think it was.
Had been Tretega Estate and before?
This was all Tretega Estate-owned farms, the lot. Most of the houses in this area, and I think the most easterly farm on the Tretega Estate is the other side of Penhow, in fact, on the A48. And they owned, the estate was massive, you know. Are you familiar with this area?
Yes.
And Rupera, you've been up to Rupera Castle? Well, that was Lord Tretega as well.
Oh, crikey.
Llanrumney Hall. All of Llanrumney and Rumney, Lower Machan, Rupera, Machan, Baislett, Ruderin. Because the original kennels for the estate were in Baislick, because they never had the kennels too close to the main house because of the smell of the hounds. And so as it was then, you'd sort of come out of the Tretega house and hack up to what is Junction 28 now, and then go up Forge Lane, and the kennels were just at the top of Forge Lane on the right hand side. And when you go to the top of Forge Lane and you've got the Tretega Arms in front of you, there were workshops to the left of that as well.
My goodness, it was so, there must have been so many people who were tenants of the Tretega estate.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So I wonder if we can just go back a little bit and talk about your parents. Who were they and where were they born?
My mum and dad came from St Andrews and Dinas Powys. My mum was from Dinas Powys, dad was St Andrews, village, two villages a mile apart. My dad was one of five, my mum was one of ten. And they got married and had my older brother just as the Second World War began. And then dad was away in the army, he was in the Royal Artillery and spent about 4 years in Burma during the Second World War.
What, was a prisoner?
No, he was a captain in the Royal Artillery, so he was in Burma.
So he was
fighting the Japs.
Goodness, what was his name?
Gustavus Emerson Rooney.
Amazing.
Why? What a name!
Did he use that name, like kind of in common?
He didn't like it, so he got it shortened, and everyone called him Govo.
Okay.
So
I wonder what his parents were thinking.
Well, his mother was an Emerson, his father was Rooney, so they were all named. My uncles were Dennis Emerson Rooney, Bernard Emerson Rooney, William Emerson Rooney, and Gustavus Emerson Rooney.
Gosh,
he totally got the best name.
Wow, Govo. Yeah. So he spent 4 years in Burma with the Royal Artillery.
Yep.
Did he ever talk about his experiences?
Not a lot. Not a lot, no. No. He came back with a samurai sword that he'd actually taken off a dead Japanese officer. And when dad died, mum was short of money, so it got sold in Sotheby's, because the inside of the scabbard has the Japanese, the history of that particular family and their family tree on it, inscribed on the, so it made then in 1974, that made about £750, which was quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
We used to play with it as kids.
What a story! Yeah. Did he say anything else about his experiences?
Just how nasty the Japanese were to fight. They were not nice people. Then, I mean, obviously things have changed over the years, but No, he didn't say a great deal.
And your mother then, tell us about her, what was her name?
Margaret Winifred.
Well, that's
so
more
she
like
was,
it.
But Margaret Winifred Hill was her maiden name. And as I say, she was one of 10, 6 girls, 4 boys. And they were born in St Andrews. And my grandfather, her dad, was Walter Hill, who started Hill's Transport in Cardiff, which became quite a big firm. But then he died before I was born. Well, both my grandfathers did. But he died without making a will, so there were family feuds for many years after that.
So, do you know how your parents met?
In a village in Dinas Powys.
No, I can't picture where Dinas Powys is.
Right, Leckwith.
Is it Cardiff?
Just to the west of Cardiff.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Wenvo. Mm-hmm. Do you know Wenvo?
Yeah.
When you go from Wenvo going towards Roos Airport.
Yeah.
When you get to where Wenvo Garden Centre is.
Yeah.
If you turn left at there, then the first place the village you'll come to is St Andrews, and the next one is Dinas Powys, and then Leckwith, and you come down into Cardiff by Cardiff City Stadium.
Okay. Yeah. So what brought your parents here? And were they from farming stock?
Dad was from farming stock, and Mum was obviously transport business. And obviously, because these farms were being sold up then by the insurance company, that was what brought him here.
So Dinas Powys, what's the landscape there? Is it flat?
No.
Is it hilly?
No, hilly.
Okay, so this would have been completely different landscape.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember him ever talking about maybe the challenges of that?
I think they had a lot of work to do when they first came here, as far as sort of taking hedges out was concerned, cleaning out reens, that sort of thing.
So. Because I've been trying to explain to Laura, because neither of us are from the area, explain to Laura, the unique drainage system here.
That's right.
It must be quite a challenge for a farmer coming from a hilly area to come here.
Yeah, well, that's right, because you've got to. Fortunately, we're not too bad here. Once you get just slightly lower down, then it's the boundaries of the fields are all reens. Here, we've still got quite a few hedges.
Why is that then? Why have you got hedges and not reens?
Because we're just above the structure of the reens.
Oh, really? Okay, I've never thought about that.
Mm.
So, when your parents came here, did it look different?
Well, all the farm buildings were that side then.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
These were... Dad sold this... for development in 1970, around about 1970, I suppose.
So what sort of farm was it?
Milking cows, sheep, pigs, chickens.
Did you have a milk round then?
No. But in the village here then, we had a dairy.
Oh yes, I know.
Where we've got just the other side of the shop was Cambroy and United Dairies.
Mm-hmm.
And all the local farmers were structure of very small farms all around here. And I think we sat down and worked it out a few years ago that between Rumney and Newport, below the A48, there were something like 40 milk producing farms. But now there are 3. But they probably milk the same amount of cows because they're all huge farming units.
Mm.
Whereas these were all small farms, pretty much self-sufficient, because we'd have sort of 20-odd cows and some sheep, some pigs, some chickens, maybe fatten a couple of turkeys up for Christmas, that sort of thing.
I wonder if your father ever used the livestock market on...
Timowa Lane?
Yeah.
He could I never knew it as T-Mower Lane. I always knew it as Market Road.
Yes, that's right.
Because the market was, and the market, I can't remember the market being in use, but he could when he first came here, because they'd be able to drive the stock to market then.
When you say drive, do you mean on the road?
Yeah. And I mean, there'd be milking cows walking up and down here all the time, going from the field to the dairy, back and forth. That was the norm in all villages.
When you say to the dairy, you mean
to be milked.
Milking parlour?
Yeah.
So you had your own milking parlour, did you?
Yeah, there's a cow shed there, and that's where they were all milked, yeah.
And then...
So our milk was in a cooler here, and that's the only milk we ever had.
Into a churn?
Yeah, yeah. We'd have to take the churns down to the dairy every morning.
So do you know, we've just turned off the main road to come up here. How much has that road, for example, changed?
Oh, it's this village in Castleton has changed considerably. I mean, there was, between here and the Gateway Chapel just down the road, there were no houses. And then from the Gateway Chapel to the Mason's Arms pub, there were no bungalows. So, it has changed considerably, the village.
It was just a really rural spot.
Very rural, yeah.
So, it was all farmland?
Pretty much so, yeah. Yeah.
So, I was just taking Laura down towards Rumney, you know, where the Neils are. And,
yeah.
You know, that I've so spoken to people who said that was all farmland in recent memory.
All small holdings. Of small farms, small holders. Yep.
So your mother pitched in on the farm as well. She helped out.
Yeah, she was a good worker, Mum. Had to be up at 6 every morning to get out there and help. Because Dad, he had what's called farmer's lung, which was from the spores in fousty hay. And that affected his breathing quite considerably. So he couldn't, from a young age, I could never remember him being able to do very much physical work.
Mm.
So Mum had to do quite a lot.
Oh, really?
Mm. So I'm the youngest of five. So as soon as I was old enough, I was helping as well.
You just all had to pitch in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So... Before we move back on to you, Tim, are there any other memories or anecdotes your parents told you about running a farm here?
It was hard work, but quite rewarding, because they'd be garden where my son's house is there now. That was our lawn and garden for the house here, and so you grow the veg. There'd be always food here. There was an orchard just down there. There was another orchard just up here. So we always had plenty of apples, pears, that sort of thing.
Cider?
No, he didn't make any cider. Could have done. The old man was more of a whiskey drinker than a cider drinker.
So you didn't have a mobile cider press around
here?
No. Okay. What about... haymaking time and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that something... Did your parents have to do the old-fashioned rick and thatch?
They did before they moved here. Where by the time they'd moved here, which is, as I say, after the Second World War, small bales of hay were being produced then.
Did your father then, when your parents came here, did they have work horses?
No. He had an old tractor.
Oh. That's quite early for a tractor then.
They started before the Second World War, the tractors. They started in the sort of 20s and 30s, but they didn't come into a lot of use until the early 50s.
Yeah. So he was quite early then, really,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah.
So what's your earliest memory here? So this has been your home forever?
Yeah, it has, yeah. When my wife and I got married, we moved to a little house in Baislick. And then moved back to Mallard's Reach, and then ended up buying this back off my mum, because she was getting elderly, living on her own, because Dad died when I was 18, so... Mm. So she found it tough, and so I bought it back off her.
So, and it was still a small holding then?
Yes. Yeah, mum would rent the ground out just to get a bit of a small income. But I've always had the forge there. So obviously I would pay mum rent for the forge until we bought it.
So did you go to Marshfield School?
Yeah.
So what was that like? So you were there...
Well, it was an old church school, Marshfield School. Where Marshfield School is now...
Yeah.
The building just the other side of the traffic calming...
Yeah.
Was the church school. That was the school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
Let me see...
So you would have been there in the 60s?
That would have been... I started in Marshfield School in 1961, and I moved then up to Baislick when I was 11, so 1967.
So what was school like then?
Marshfield School was quite a nice little school. You start off in what was the infants, and then moved up three classes before moving on to Baislick.
So what did you do as a child down here?
Played quite a lot.
But what sort of things did you do?
Climbing trees, making dens.
Did you ever play in the rings?
No, not really. No, between here and the county club in St. Mellons, which is only 3/4 of a mile as the crow flies, directly across there, and Dad rented a lot of ground there off the guy who bought the golf course back in the 1940s. That would have been off the presumably that was off the Tredegar estate as well. A chap by the name of Gwyn Davis, and he and Dad were quite friendly, so Dad used to rent the ground off him. And we had the grazing on the golf course during the winter as well.
Oh, really?
Because golf wasn't the sport or pastime that it is now.
Mm.
And during the winter, no one would play golf.
So we'd
graze sheep up there.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine?
And then we'd use what were the roughs then. I mean, the roughs are about this high now. Do you play golf at all?
No.
But... all golf courses now, the grass, there's no long grass anywhere. Whereas when we had the ground up there, we'd make hay off the roughs in the summertime and graze sheep on the in the wintertime.
God, that's hilarious.
But of course, when we're making hay then, cutting the grass, you'd be finding lots of golf balls. So we'd go and sell as kids, we'd go and sell them back to the golfers.
What, did the golfers ever have anything to say about that? Were they ever up there at all?
Yeah, but they didn't know any different. That wasn't the norm then.
What about the sea wall? Did you ever go down there?
Yeah, we used to go down there as kids playing.
Which part of the sea wall did you...
By the lighthouse.
Okay, and what sort of things did you get up to down there?
Catching crabs.
Mm-hmm. Well, going down on the foreshore,
yeah,
then. So was that ever... Were your parents ever concerned about you being down there?
They generally took us down there.
Oh. I mean, because you have to know the tides, though, don't you? Because it has to be...
Oh, yeah, the tides are can be very dangerous, so we'd never go too far from the seawall.
Mm. Did you ever go out and find anything?
Find anything, as in...
clay pipes, cannonballs?
No.
No?
No.
Did you ever swim in the water there?
No. It's muddy.
Well, people have done, haven't
they? Mum and Dad would take us down to Coldnap Baths to swim.
Oh, really?
Well, I learned to swim in the swimming pool in the county club.
Oh, really?
Which was, it was a private house then.
Yeah.
And it had an indoor pool, which were very rare things in those days.
Yeah, quite posh.
Mm, very posh.
Got your own now, though, haven't you?
hot tub. Yeah.
So we were just being down at the Light End in the big chalet part there. What was there before that was established?
Well, I can't remember it anything other than a caravan park.
Oh,
because
really?
There were kids that came to Marshfield School from the caravan site there.
Oh. But it wasn't a gypsy travelling?
No, never. No.
So, do you know there's lots of gypsy travelling camps around? Have they always been down here?
No.
No?
No. They were situated between Peterston, as in by the Six Bells,
yeah,
and Rumney. The verges there are very, very wide. Now there's horses tethered out there.
Mm.
But there would be a couple of Romany gypsies with their caravans parked on some of those wide verges, and that's where they lived.
Mm.
But the gypsy camps now, they're Irish tinkers, they're not real old gypsies. These were the proper old Romany gypsies.
Yeah, what, with roll-top caravans?
Yeah, roll-top caravans, slightly darker skins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the ladies would come round selling pegs,
oh,
or telling fortunes.
Oh, yeah.
So mum would never turn them away.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah.
So let's just go back to when you started when did you first think about becoming a farrier? Hello.
When I was in school, and Dad, I wanted to leave school, and he said, "Well, you've got to go to work." And that was really the only thing that appealed to me. So I started my apprenticeship with the idea of doing my apprenticeship and then doing something else afterwards. But as I say, Dad died halfway through my apprenticeship, so there was always stuff to do here. And then I met my wife when I was 18 or 19. We got married when I was 21, and the rest, as they say, is history.
But so, why did you choose Penhow to do your apprenticeship?
We used to take horses out there to be shod.
Your own horses?
Yeah.
Okay, so how long have you kept horses?
Oh, my gosh. My grandfather, Dad's father, was a horse dealer and used to sell horses to the army.
Oh, crazy.
And he used to race horses. My father raced, all of my uncles raced.
Oh my goodness, so let's go to your father's father. What was his name?
He was Gustavus as well.
Oh, my goodness, so he was a horse dealer?
Yeah. And farmer.
Okay, well tell me about him then.
Well, he was dead before I was born, so it's only hearsay for what I heard from my father.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had four sons and a daughter, so I think he was quite strict. And he was still riding into his 70s.
When you say riding, what, leisure riding or racing?
No, riding horses to get them schooled to sell. And he used to sell horses to the army, because the army wanted as many horses as they could get, especially leading up to the Second World War.
That's amazing.
And then his sons, because my dad was the youngest of the four sons, and the other sons all went into horses in one way or another.
And what sort of way?
Uncle Dennis went to work for a chap in the West Country who had hunters, and he was produced the hunters for him. Uncle Barney was a head lad in a racing yard out at Chepstow for Colin Davis. And that was a very successful yard. And then Uncle Bill, he went to Northern Ireland and he became the biggest winner of point-to-point races for many, many years, until the record was broken about 12 years ago. And he also had stallions at stud there. He had a son and four daughters. His son got killed racing. Broke his neck, got killed.
Oh.
My cousin Jerry. Uncle Bill got killed, actually, and they said the last rites over him because they thought he was Catholic. But he survived. He was a tough old son. My Uncle Barney, he broke his neck at Worcester races, but he survived. My brother broke his neck and he survived.
Wow. What, they're jockeys?
Yeah.
But when you say jockey, do you mean, you said point to point? And when I think
yeah,
of point jockey,
to point is amateur racing.
Okay, so the
amateur jockeys. Yep.
Okay. So, what's the difference then? I mean, are you a different
amateurs don't get paid.
But I mean, are you tougher?
Well, you're doing a. Normally, you've got a day job as well.
Yeah, but is the course?
The courses were a lot tougher than they are now. And when I started point to point, and I said I was 14, and in point to points and it under rules then, there were no what are called safety factors. Now, the number of horses that run in each race, there's a limit as to how many can run. There were no safety factors in those days. It was every race was a cavalry charge.
Would you have worn a helmet?
Yes, but not as good as they were now. You know, the health and safety has improved that considerably, in so much as the helmets and the body protectors. We had no body protectors, mm-hmm. just a flimsier sort of helmet.
And so your dad was a horseman too?
Yeah, dad rode about 70 winners point to point in. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did he race then? Were there any races down here?
Oh yeah, local point to points.
Where?
Baislick, Macon, Penhow, Howick near Chepstow, Bombleston, Penturk. Yeah, there were a lot of local point to points.
So was he still racing, you know, later in life?
He would have finished racing in the sort of late 60s. And then I started in 1970. So he would have probably finished in 1964, 65 maybe.
So you kept horses here?
Always, yeah.
How many
did
you have?
I suppose the most we've ever had, he would probably have been about a dozen.
So that's how you knew the farrier in Penhow?
Yeah.
So you brought yours up there. But that's quite away from here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Why did you not choose somewhere closer?
There was one in Macon, but there was one very old gentleman in Macon who didn't want to take on any more work, but his son hadn't done any proper training, so Dad didn't want to take the horses to him. He wanted to take them to a guy that was well trained.
So this was a Scottish guy, or was it?
Yep.
Yeah, so he'd been there for a long time.
He was quite a young guy. Lou was only sort of 30, 31 when I started my apprenticeship.
Oh.
And then by the time I was getting to the end of my apprenticeship in 1976, Lou had to give up because he got bad sciatica, back trouble. So I was able to take on some of his work, and then the business progressed from there.
But so when you finished your apprenticeship, did you set up here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were the early days like then here? I mean, was there much, do you get much custom from the area?
Oh yeah. Because there weren't very many farriers about then, so I was pretty much inundated with work. That's why I took on apprentices to help me.
Oh.
And the business progressed from there.
If I can just go back to Penhow slightly.
Yeah.
It says that you Penhow Beagles.
Is yeah, that well, that was very close to where the forge was in Penhow. You know where the Forester's Oaks pub is?
Yeah.
When you pass the Forester's Oaks, you climb a hill.
Mm.
And halfway up that hill, there's an entrance in on the right-hand side to Hunter's Lodge.
Mm.
And Derek Jones had the Beagles there. Mm. That's where he kept the Monmouthshire Beagles.
Mm.
And then the forge at Penhow was just past the Crosswen pub. As you pass the Crosswen pub, there's a little house on the right-hand side. That was the house for the forge, and the buildings were just a little further down.
So you would have had lots of hunts?
A lot of horses came to the forge then.
Yeah.
We didn't go out shoeing.
No, they came to you.
Yeah.
Well, how much is your job going out then?
No.
Well, I mean,
we go out to shoe virtually every horse we shoe now, because people, number one, they would prefer you to go to them because it's more convenient. it suits us a lot better because the horses are quieter in their own environment than putting them in a trailer or a lorry and taking them to a forge, because they're out of their comfort zone a little bit then. Whereas when I was at Pen Howe, most of the horses that came to the forge to be shod were ridden there. So, well, yeah, it was a different. There was the traffic wasn't like it is now.
So do you know? You know, I've seen people doing trotting along here with those little carriage, not a carriage, not sure. It's a
sulky.
Little buggy.
It's a sulky.
A silky.
Yeah.
S-I-L.
That's S-U-L-K-I-E, sulky.
Sulky,
yeah.
Okay.
That's what they're called. And that's that they train them behind that and then race them on tracks.
Oh, right. Okay. So is that necessarily a gypsy traveller type?
Yeah, it is a little bit. Mm. But they do some road races as well, which aren't legal, I don't think.
Well, I think I've seen them on the A48. Yeah.
They go on the A48, they go on the Risca bypass.
Yeah, it's quite scary.
Yeah.
So, but do you get custom from the horses that tether?
I have shod some of them for them in the past. Hmm. I don't shoe any for them, no.
Okay.
Sam, my son, does a few.
But would that have been quite a bit of custom at some point?
Yeah, because they wear the shoes out very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. So where do most of your customers come from then?
Well, word of mouth. I mean, I've been shoeing for most of my customers for 30 odd years, I suppose. Some a bit longer. So we must be doing something right to keep the custom. And generally word of mouth. But most of the horses we shoe are sort of riding horses now. We did at one time shoe a couple of racing yards, and there were a lot more point to pointers trained locally back in the sort of 70s, 80s and 90s. There aren't now. So we used to have a lot of work from the point-to-pointers and racehorses.
Why aren't there now?
A lot of farmers don't have point-to-pointers now, whereas it used to be that every farmer would have a point-to-pointer.
And there are fewer farms here as well?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So what... See, when I think of horses and horse racing, or point, I always think of... posh people?
No.
So, but...
Anyone can have a horse to go point to point in.
Was it something that most farm sons did then?
Yeah, a great deal of farmers had a point to pointer, and their sons or daughters would get involved with them.
So sons and daughters could race alongside each other?
Yeah, but now The restrictions for riding in point to points has become more difficult. You've got to pay to get a riding certificate. You can't start until you're 16, whereas there was no age restriction years ago. And it has become more professional, unfortunately, so that. It's sort of pushing the real amateurs, fun lovers, away from the sport a little, which is a shame.
Mm. What's the biggest horse you've ever shoed?
Shoed?
Or shod? What's the expression?
Biggest? 18 hands.
Is that big?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's smallest?
But 26 inches.
Have you ever been kicked or bitten or anything like that?
Yeah, loads of times.
Mm.
Kicked, bitten, broken bones, stitches. All the fingers have been stitched together at one point or another.
So we were in your workshop before, and it almost looks timeless. You know, really. And I don't mean that to be an insult. I think it looks gorgeous. Is there anything about the craft of being a farrier? I mean, would you describe yourself as a farrier?
Yeah, definitely. The tools that you can buy are a lot better now. Precision tools are a lot better. And obviously, electric helped a great deal. because you'd have, originally, the old wind-up forge. That was the first sort of forge to take out, and then gas forges became usable. So then it was far easier to go out shoeing horses.
You'd be more mobile.
Yeah, definitely.
But is there anything about your craft that is uniquely Welsh or of the levels? I mean, could you say that?
No.
No.
No. In a word?
So
tipsy.
Hello, hello, darling. So do you know? I'll come back to the field in a minute, my maid. But do your fields have names?
Yes. Yeah. The one across there that's got the bales in it is the chapel field, because that's the closest one to the chapel. This is the front field. Field down there has always been known as the field beyond Goods, because the cottage there was Bill Good and his wife, and then Ron Good, their son, and they were there for as long as ever I can remember. So yeah.
Do you know there on any map, or is that just something you know?
Oh, that's just our way of calling them.
So would you know the names of reens around here?
No, only the sort of main rein there, going down to the goat farm.
So the gout, forgive me for sounding ignorant, no, the gout is that another name for rein?
No, there was a farm at the bottom of the Broadway.
It's that long...
The long, wide rein, the very wide rein. When you go past the Imoyran now and over the railway bridge, then you've got the Broadway there, is a big main rein. And when you get to the bottom of that, the building on the right-hand side now was the goat farm.
Is it still there?
The building is the farm, isn't it? No. The farm got sold, and just across the way there was turned into a golf course, but that's not, it's not a golf course anymore.
Quite a few golf courses around here, aren't
there? Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever fish in the reens?
Yeah, we used to catch fish.
What sort of fish?
Oh, only little tiddlers. Nothing very much, nothing substantial.
No eels or anything?
You'd see an odd eel, yeah, but not too many.
So, dear, when you were a child, a young boy, and now, has anything changed in nature? Has anything disappeared, or anything returned, or anything like that?
Disappeared?
Any birds used to see, or flowers used
to see? We don't hear the cuckoo now. We hear the cuckoo every year. Haven't heard a cuckoo down here for 20 years, I don't suppose. So the cuckoo's gone. Nightjar, we don't hear a nightjar now. Get plenty of swallows, but they were late this year. Probably not as many starlings as there used to be. But apart from that, that would probably be all as far as the birds are concerned.
Hares?
Don't see any hares now. Used to see lots of hares.
Otters?
Haven't seen an otter for a long time, no. Because there were mink that got loose, and they basically chased the otters away because they're more aggressive.
So did you have any unusual clients over the years? You don't have to name them.
Any unusual clients?
Yeah, or ones that stand out in your memory?
Quite a few. There used to be a very grand old gentleman by the name of Len Hayes, who lived just off Wentlug Road in Rumney, and he used to drive horses all the time.
Yeah.
And Len was quite a character, always wore a grey bowler hat, had one foot which was a bit gammy, so he never walked sound. But he used to drive horses quite a lot, yeah.
What, through choice? Because he didn't have a car?
Oh, through choice. Yeah, he'd drive the horses from Rumney to the forge to get shod, and then drive them home again.
So what sort of, was it just a little two-seater?
Oh, no, he'd drive a carriage, so he'd be able to take four or five people in it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, proper. He'd two big grey horses.
Oh, lovely. Really?
Yeah, he was a great old character, Len Hayes.
What was his background then?
He'd always been a coaching person. Because he... I don't know when it was, but he drove a stagecoach from St. Mellons to London. But I don't know how long ago.
Why? Just because he could?
Yeah. They had stop-off points on the way. Of course, there were no motorways then.
Gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, did he tell you that?
Yeah, he told me that.
Yeah. So he had a collection of carriages?
He did, yeah. Yeah, he used to have a little hackney pony that he'd take in a small carriage, a bit bigger than the silkies you see out here. But then, as far as the bigger horses are concerned, he had a couple of different carriages for them because he did weddings and that sort of thing.
Gosh.
Yeah.
And he lived near Rumney, that way?
Yeah, he was off Wentloog Road.
Yeah. Any other characters?
Well, the original old Tom Price the Gypsy, he came here one morning about 6:30, I suppose, in a Morris 1000 van. Mm-hmm. That would have been 1976, I suppose. With a Shetland pony in the back to be shod.
In the back of the van?
In the back of the van. Back of a Morris 1000 van. Yeah.
So was he quite a well-known character in the community?
Yeah, he was.
Why?
I think he was a bit of a fighter.
Oh!
He had about 4 sons and they're all... they've all had horses over the years. But not nice. He was a genuine chap.
Did he live in a roll top or something?
No, he lived in a caravan.
Do you have so your son now has he was your apprentice?
Yep, he was.
And he's working with you. Yeah, what's his name?
Sam.
So second generation.
Yep.
So you're passing on skills that you learnt from your teacher.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what I've learned from my apprentices over the years as well.
Okay.
Because you always learn stuff. If they go off to competitions or shows and they come back with other ideas, so you have to be open-minded.
Anything you'd like to ask?
I'm quite intrigued by these kind of like the sort of the world championships and the Olympic events.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, Billy Crothers, as I say, was from Maxwell Road in Rumney, and he was always very keen on doing competitions, and he went off to America, and they had world championships at the Calgary Stampede, which is in July, beyond now, I suppose. Maybe it was last week. And he won the world championships over there 5 times. Another Welshman who did his apprenticeship in Cowbridge was Grant Moon, and he did his apprenticeship at the same time as Billy, and he won the world championship 5 times as well.
Okay. So how does it work? Like how do they compete? How are they assessed? And
well, my wife and I went across to the Stampede about 11 years ago, I suppose, and Billy and Andy were competing across there at the same time. And what they do is they have to shoe a foot on a horse by starting off with a piece of straight bar, measure the horse's foot, cut the bar to the right size, and then trim the horse's foot in readiness for it, make the shoe, fit it and apply it within a certain time.
Okay.
And they have to do that over a period of a couple of days on different horses, different types of horses.
Okay.
And always within a time limit.
Okay. That's remarkable. It's things that you never even think about existing.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. But it was like $10,000 to the winner.
Right. So what makes one I don't know how to phrase the question. How would one person's work be judged as like superior to another's? Like, what are the criteria? That's like, well,
the quality of the work, the precision of the work, the levelness of the foot,
okay.
The symmetry of the foot when it's been trimmed has to be very, very good.
Yeah.
The levelness has to be good. Then when the shoe is made, it has to fit that foot exactly.
Yeah.
And within a certain time.
Yeah.
Tipsy. She's bigger than you, Tips.
How old is she?
Oh, she's only about 13 weeks now. Yeah.
That's so cute.
We went up to Mold in North Wales to get her when she was just coming up to 8 weeks old.
She's been very brave.
She, yeah, whether she'd that be that brave if there wasn't a fence there, I don't know.
Sorry, I know I asked you this before, but I wasn't recording it. What are the oldest tools in your workshop? And have any been passed on to you?
Well, there are some tongs in there which I had off a couple of guys when I started out. There would be a couple of shoeing tools that I had off an old gentleman the other side of the village, Tom Meekin.
Who was he?
He lived on the Market Road, yeah. Or T-Mower Lane, and he had a piggery there. And when I started, he had done a little bit of shoeing at some point or another for himself many years before. So he handed me a couple of tools.
Because he kept workhorses, presumably.
Yeah, yeah. And then, as I say, some tongs for making shoes to hold them. I had those just after I started. Then there was another guy who had been working up in the valleys, and he retired and had given up. He was living across here in Dufferin, and he rang me up and said, I got some tools here if you want to come and buy them. So I bought those tools off him. And the anvils. A couple of anvils there that are quite old, which I bought. I bought the one, I was given the other one. So they'd be pretty old, I suppose. Yeah.
So I've talked a lot about, you know, being a farrier, but did you ever have much trade from farmers and wanting to use your forging skills?
Well, when I was doing my apprenticeship in Penhow, what we used to have was that the council workers would come in then and bring in, say, 20 picks to be sharpened. You don't see council workers using picks now, because it's all machine. But they had picks that would get worn out or broken, so they bring them into the forge to be sharpened. We did some work for Welsh Water Authority, making brackets and that sort of thing. And we've done the same here. When I first came here, I first started after finishing my apprenticeship, putting handles in shovels and spades, forks, that sort of thing. Or repairing them and sharpening tools.
Repairing shovels and forks?
Putting new handles in them, yeah. So, and if they were bent or anything, then we'd straighten them up and put them.
How much of that do you get now?
Not very much. People go and buy new instead. We're in a throwaway society. They don't repair things, they just chuck it away and buy something new.
Where you can bring it to a farrier, a forge, and they can sort it for you.
Yeah.
Do you ever think that at high tide you're below sea level here?
No. I think we're 22 foot above sea level here.
You're 22 foot above? Okay. So this is where the land is beginning to rise again a bit here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever been on the seawall when it's at high tide?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Oh, it's pretty impressive. Especially when you get the spring and autumn tides, which are quite high.
Yeah.
And of course there was, they said about the great flood in the 15th century, because there's a mark on Marshfield Church, and there's a mark on Gethley Bear, where the tidal waters came up to. But It was probably a tsunami, wasn't it?
So. Well, they can't make the mine, can they?
But yeah, the whole of the moors were flooded. And at very low tide, you can see the remains of the old Peterston village out in the mud flats.
No, I've been told that. Is that true?
Yeah.
Really? Have you seen it?
But yeah, you see remains of buildings.
So what happened? Why is that out there? Is that because the sea's retreated or come back? Or?
Well, that's where the village of Peterston was. In a way, you stand by the on the sea wall. That's where the sea wall was built.
Wow, my goodness.
I couldn't tell you exactly when the sea wall was built, but it was the sea wall defence and to stop any more flooding.
Goodness, that's amazing.
So the villagers had to retreat back to what is higher ground.
I wonder when that was.
Is it before your lifetime? Before you were born?
Oh yeah, yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember when it was.
Did your did you have anything else you want to ask?
No.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Tim, that we haven't asked?
Right, I think you've been fairly thorough.
Oh, that makes a change. Does it feel good that your son's carrying on?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, sorry, have I asked this question about when you started off, or when your father moved down here, would there have been any village forge? You often talk...
There wasn't a forge in Marshfield. There was a forge in Castleton.
Yeah.
And I believe the lady whose husband had the forge is still there. She's very elderly, but when you get to the top of Castleton,
yeah,
and you've got the old church on the right hand side,
yeah,
just next to it there was a tiny forge there.
Oh really? Mm. But was that within your father's lifetime?
Yes.
Yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Dad originally used to ride horses to St. Mellon's to get them shod.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah, before transporting horses. I mean, I can only remember going to sort of Penhow to get the horses shod. But there was Jack Jones had a forge in St. Mellon's. They're building some buildings there. Now there's a chip shop, and it was just past that, and it's still, forge house is still there. And he used to spend 3 days of the week there, and he had another forge up in Rumney. There was a pub which has been knocked down now called the Carpenter's Arms, and his other forge was on the end of the Carpenter's Arms.
What, to maximise his business, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously all the customers then would ride horses or lead horses to the forge. So it was easier to lead them if you were closer to St. Mellon's or closer to Rimney.
So how would your father have got to St. Mellon's from here?
Oh, from here, it's 2 miles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so... yeah, down the road here, and you come out by, well, you go to Cypress Drive, but you didn't have to then, it was just through the lanes.
Ah. But, you know, just, you know, footpaths around here.
Yeah.
Do you know about all the footpaths? And
oh, stuff? Don't I? Whew. They're a bane of our life. The footpath comes right through the middle of this yard.
Yeah.
There's a stile there.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes right through the front field. So there's a stile at the bottom of the front field.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a shortcut for kids now, back and forth to the playing fields.
Oh,
but originally, footpaths were built to either go to church or go to a well.
Are they still a public right of way?
Yeah.
Even though they're going through your land.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to just let anyone that wants to wander through there.
Yeah, but we do police them.
Right.
You know, because you get kids coming through messing about and playing and jumping on fences and kicking a ball around and...
With all the animals as well, actually.
Smoking and drinking and so, yeah, we keep a very close eye on them.
So was there a well way somewhere?
There was a well where those big trees are there. There was a well in there that I can remember as a kid.
Really?
Hmm.
What do you remember about it? Was it a functioning well?
There was water running there.
Really?
Yeah, there was a big old slab of slab covering it basically.
So well, did your parents use that when they arrived here?
Or? Nope. No, no, they had water coming in on a tap.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Modern.
Oh, yeah. That is modern for its time,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I was just talking to somebody this morning about the Bryn Iver care home.
Bryn Iver, yeah.
He was brought up in Castleton.
Oh, yeah.
And he said their only water was from a spring.
Was it?
Yeah. For, you know, first 10 years of his life.
Good
he's
Lord.
90, you know. Is there anything else you'd like to ask him that we haven't asked?
I don't think so.
Shall I switch it off then?
Yeah, kind of fine.
Yeah,
no problem.
I hope I haven't missed anything. Well, you've got an opportunity to add stuff
sure.
and take stuff away.
That's okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
No trouble.
Thank you. That's just bang on an hour.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.